Welcome back, everybody. This is Sight to the Blind. Finishing up the segment of part two of Men of Honor. But before I get into all that, I just wanted to point out how hilariously ironic that the NBA chose Terry Rozier and Chauncey Billups to go down for gambling. Mind you, the whole entire sports industry has formulated its scoring or its wins and losses through each team by gambling. Why do you think every time you open up an app, whether it be TikTok, X, or Instagram, is pushing gambling? Especially out here in Florida. I don't know how many times I've seen Ray Lewis's commercial with the Hard Rock trying to get people into sports betting. They are truly sucking the life or the funds and preying on the insignificant. Those who are trying to double their money up by gambling, they are sucking them dry. They are preying on their vice, their disease. All it takes for you to win a couple of games till you start that disease, that vice, of thinking that you can really pick winners and losers and point spreads based off a game that's already been shown to be scripted, rigged through numerology. You'll never be able to win because you don't know when they are able to switch the point spread in their favor. You would have to think from their side of it. If any of you are gambling aficionados, I tried it one time. I thought I could try it based off of the rituals that they were shown, either it be a football player that died, that played for two teams or one of the teams that had a good shot of being in the Super Bowl that had the numerology attached to his name. I played it maybe twice one time, and I failed. I think the year that I tried to do it was the year, I think, a football player died, and they said he was alive, and then he died again, and he played for the Bills and the Buccaneers, And then his number totaled up to like the 136, and I attached that to Baker Mayfield because at that time they were the underdog, and if they won, it would have paid out seven times as much than any other team that would have gone. And that year, that's when the Taylor Swift relationship came out. So then I ended up losing because they chose Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce to go to the Super Bowl to win to boost the relationship value of that of those two people. And of course, the money that it gotten for the NFL for all the attention because of Taylor Swift. So, you know, you're never gonna be right. Because you're not in the meetings, you're not in the Masonic lodges, you don't know how these people think. And when they choose to change their minds, because I've seen them change their minds mid-playoff, and they do this by ritual. So, but once you locked into a gambling spread, once you locked into the gambling, it's all said and done. You're never going to be able to keep up. So that's why they're forcing this disease on people. They want people to bet. And you think that Terry Rozier and Chauncey Billups going down is supposed to all of a sudden stop gambling in the NBA or stop gambling, period? It's not. People just made jokes about it, made memes about it, and it's just going to be thrown under the rug. What are going to be their next steps? They're gonna permanently ban these two players. I mean, the coach and player. You think they're the only ones that have ever gambled? Especially when players or ex-players and current players have came out and said the game is rigged. They admitted to that. I remember Draymond Green admitted that one team was gonna beat this team in the playoffs, and then another player said, "Oh, bro, you broke the code." And running the numerology of the phrase "broke the code" or break the code was 666. So they already know that these games are rigged. I mean, it's not that hard to hide it from a team, a player that's only what? How many players they have on an NBA team? Like maybe 7 or 8, maybe 10, if that. It's different for the NFL. You got about 40 some guys interchanging most times throughout the week. And that's not even including practice players. But when it comes to the NBA, pretty much everyone knows something. They're around each other almost all the time. By 82-game season, they're around each other a lot. I know they know that some of these players are in Freemasonry or some of them in the occult. They have to know. You're around these people too much to not know nothing. So you would have to know that they were gambling. They just want it to be a distraction. Anytime there's a distraction or laws they need to be passed or something else they need you to get over so you don't investigate it too much, they'll throw out anything that has Negroes attached to it and just throw it in front of your face as if they are changing the channel and say, oh, pay attention to this. Like all of a sudden we're not talking about the Louvre heist. That somehow in one of the most guarded art museums of all the world, in broad daylight, they decide to rob this exhibit of $100 million diamonds, or worth $100 million, in broad daylight. And then they don't even talk about anything else after that. They don't show you the security footage. They don't show you the perpetrators. They say it's an inside job. They haven't even gone into it. So they just threw out this whole gambling thing. Oh, get your mind off that. Get your mind off that. Don't worry about this heist. Just like I told you in the last episodes, that before the government shut down, there was a $1 billion lottery jackpot, and that went to someone who set up a company. So how do you know you're going to win? So the time that you saw your winning ticket, you like, all right, I'm going to create a LLC in order to remain anonymous so you don't know who won the ticket, won the Powerball prize. All right. Then there was the government shutdown. Then Bitcoin tanked $19 billion. Now you got this Louvre heist. If y'all have to understand what people tell you or show you, they are pirates. Pirates. That's all they are. Pirates. You would think that they have so much control over the money supply and banks and Fort Knox and the Federal Reserve that they would just create a separate machine where they could just print the money and just get the money put in their accounts, or just lie and put the money in accounts. But it always brings me back to the Matrix movies. When Keanu Reeves' character Neo, he says, no, it wasn't Neo, it was Lawrence Fishburne, it was Morpheus. He said that regardless, like, they are still attached to the rules. He said, it don't matter how powerful and how quick and how fat, their system and their control is still based on rules of a system. So you would think if they own the money supply, why not just print the money yourself? Or just falsify the digital information and just put money, just boom, out of nowhere, just put money in there. But it has to be tracked. Everything has to be tracked. So that's why they have all these little black bag missions that they go on to steal money. This is why they float money in from Afghanistan using the heroin from the poppy fields. This is why the crack epidemic happened in the 80s, and they used Free Ray Rick Ross, you know, with the CIA to bring crack into the... This is, like I said, it all has to be attached to, or this has to be a paper trail. Nothing can be made out of thin air, because it's not what the system was made for or made by. For things to be happening out of thin air, everything has to be material. It all has to have a physical interaction. Nothing can be just out of nowhere. So the rules of their game is, it's their system. But yet they still don't control majority of the people. They control some people, but they don't control majority of the people. And it's the majority of the people they don't want to awaken and say, you know, hold up. We're whistleblowing this. They are stealing this money, or they created this money out of thin air, and I see it on the computer systems. It's better for them to mock you and put it in plain sight in front of you. So you know that all this gambling and all this heisting and all these Bitcoin financial crises that they're creating, it's all of them attaching the material to their plan. Which is pretty much get everybody into gambling so that people can lose their wealth faster, especially from the ground up, from the bottom up. Because people who gamble hard are people who are to lower middle class. looking to, you know, gain some type of funds or some financial or alleviate some financial pressure by gambling, because it's them that are entertained majority by the sports industry. People who really got money and all that don't really have time to be trying to gamble when they got kids and a wife and they have a pretty good mortgage and all that. They're not going to overextend themselves. They know where that's going to lead. But the lower to middle lower class, they're looking for that dream shot. They're willing to take risks. And the gambling, because it's the only education they understand, they know from gambling, they know they can make that work. It's not like they're going to make up or create a specific device that everybody needs that they can patent and make billions off of it. It's not that type of intelligence. Their intelligence goes as far as just gambling on teams. A great movie to watch about that is Two for the Money with Al Pacino that's in it. It's a great movie. It basically predicted programmed the Kansas City Chiefs going into the first Super Bowl, not against the New York Giants or a New York team, but it was Kansas City in the Super Bowl. And it almost goes down just like when they played against the San Francisco 49ers. But it was a great predictive programming when I watched it a little time after Kansas City won the Super Bowl that I came across that movie. I've seen this movie before. But it was just, to watch it again, you start catching things that you missed because obviously you wasn't awakened at the time. So watch that movie if you want to understand the mentality of what people go through when they gamble. Next, I'm going to talk about X Games. And when I say X Games, I'm not talking about Red Bull. I'm not talking about ESPN2 or whatever channel they have these X Games on. I'm talking about your exes. And there's a brother who is stressed out because he wants to be blessed with a wife and is shy. He wants to start his journey of being the head of the household, a husband, a provider, and a coverer. But he's attached to his ex. Because he cheated, he wants to go back and right that wrong. And I don't know if it's the Ruach telling him like to try to bridge that gap of, which is something that we go through. When you wake up and you feel some type of righteousness, you feel the need to be accountable for your actions to right your wrongs, whether it be old friendships, whether it be platonic friendships, whether it be with parents, whether it be with bosses, work friends, whatever. So sometimes it's dangerous to try to go back to fix something that Yah has removed. Even if it was by your own indiscretion or your own iniquity, it's pretty much gone. You should let it go. It's like when scripture says, he who takes his hand off the plow and turns back is not fit for the kingdom. Or he that returns, like a dog returns to vomit. I mean, it's a disgusting, you know, metaphor, but it is true. Why do you want to go back to something you ruined? Because it's forever ruined. If you cheated on a girl, you cheated on a guy, leave that alone. Because forever, you won't be looked at as trustworthy, regardless of how much scripture you read, how much you show her or him that you are following a different path. It doesn't matter. It's the flesh in you. It's the I wouldn't say idolatry, but it would be the haughty mindedness of you to try to prove you are a different man because you want this person so bad. And you have to remind yourself, are you doing it because you feel like now you aren't that person anymore? You want to show this person all the benefits of new you. So this is a real reason why you want to go back to fix things. You have to be careful. Because that person is not going to be where you want them to be when you go back. However you left them is exactly the image they have of you. They won't want to see, or they will try you and try your patience, try your ruach if you are truly the person you say you are now. Why take that chance? If the Most High wants to bring a woman into your life, he will bring a woman into your life. Why do you want to continue to go back to lessons that have already been learned, regardless if you were in the wrong or they were in the wrong? The Most High is not going to bring anybody new into your life, or matter of fact, he's not going to bring your future into your life until you are quit going back or quit returning to your own vomit. Once you put your hand to the plow, you keep moving forward. The minute you stop and turn back around, which is the same problem that Lot's wife had. So through your iniquity, you burned that bridge. You burned that relationship up. You threw down hailstones of fire and brimstone. Why turn back? It has never worked for anybody in Scripture. The Most High talks about stop turning back. Sodom and Gomorrah, Lot's wife, turn back. Stop returning, or stop being a dog returning to his vomit. Anything that talks about turning back, except turning back to righteousness or turning back to the ancient way, is not looked favorably upon. So let's go through Proverbs 5. Now, you can remove strange woman with your ex. So instead of when you hear strange woman, think of your ex. My son, attend unto my wisdom and bow your ear to my understanding, that you may regard discretion and that your lips may guard knowledge. For the lips of your ex drop as a honeycomb, and her or his mouth and is smoother than oil. But his or her end is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. I don't know any ex, after you cheated on them, or they cheated on you, that you will go back to, and them not being a test of your patience, a test of character, and a test of ruach. I have never seen it. Especially when you're in this walk. It's different when you're in the world. A lot of us gone back and forth with our exes when we are in the world. And either we went back and stayed with them for a little while, but at the end of the day, we left them. When you are in this walk, there is no, let's go back. Let's see what they have to say. Maybe things can work better when I'm in a new ruach and when I'm in the ruach of Yahuwah. Because I guarantee you, if Yah has chosen you to be set aside, he will send evil ruachs or evil spirits to tear that relationship up until you learn your lesson. And how can he send the evil ruachs? The same way he sent a lying spirit in the mouth of the prophets of Ahab. And we had just read the episode before that he sent an evil ruach to tear up, or we will be reading a ruach, an evil ruach that was set up to destroy the plans of the seed of Gideon, because he destroyed his other brothers. We'll read this after that. Lest you should ponder the path of life, her ways are movable, that you cannot know them. Hear me now, therefore, O ye children, and depart not from the words of my mouth. Remove your way far from her, and come not nigh the door of her house. Lest you give your honor unto others, and your ears unto the cruel. Lest strangers be filled with your wealth, and your labors be in the house of a stranger. Your labors will be in the house of your ex. Your wealth will be in the house of your ex. Why? Because she will continually try you. And you being, I want to show her that I'm walking with Yah, I'm going to do more than I'm supposed to prove to her that I'm that guy. Once you start that, specifically with women, once you show a woman that you are completely changed, they are going to put their feet to the pedal and see how much they can get away with it, or see how fast they can go before y'all both crash into the wall. She will continue to take advantage of you because she now thinks, not because you're in a new ruach, not because you're in the Torah, not because you're walking in a different path, but because your righteousness seems like a vulnerability to her. then now you're vulnerable because now you want to prove that you are no longer that guy that cheated on her. And you mourn at the last when your flesh and your body are consumed. And you mourn at the last when your flesh and your body are consumed. And say, how have I hated instruction and my heart despised reproof? And have not obeyed the voice of my teachers, nor inclined my ear to them that instructed me. I was almost in all evil in the midst of the multitude and assembly. Drink waters out of your own cistern and running waters out of your own well. Do not return to a well you already destroyed. Do not return to a well which waters are already bitter from what you did. Waters you contaminated. The waters will completely and be forever contaminated because of you. Let them be only your own and not the strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice with the woman of your youth. In order for your fountain to be blessed, that means you have to come into the foreknowledge that whatever is for you, you will never have to turn back to get it. Let her be as the loving hind and pleasant roe. Let her breast satisfy you at all times, and you ravished, and be you ravished always with her love. And why will you, my son, be ravished with a strange woman and embrace the bosom of a stranger? I'll say this again. And why will you, my son, be ravished with your ex and embrace the bosom of your ex? For the ways of man are before the eyes of Yahuwah, and he ponders all his goings. His own iniquities shall take the wicked himself, and he shall be held with the cords of his sins. He shall die without instruction, and in the greatness of his folly, he shall go astray. This is an instruction and a lesson for any of you thinking about going back to your ex to prove that you are righteous and holy than the person that you used to be. It's not even worth it. We all go through it. We all go through it when we came into this walk, felt so good about being blessed and set apart and being part of a called out assembly that we would just want to show the joy of our ruachs to everybody in our past to prove that we are no longer the person that we say that we were, or demonstrated to them that we were. And doing that, you will find yourself overextending your ruach, trying to prove it for those who want to take advantage of your kindness, your patience, your joy, your walk with Yah. This is one of the reasons why they say don't turn back, so you don't become a snare and a stumbling block to yourself, trying to save the wicked through your haughty-mindedness of trying to prove you're better than the person you used to be. Every day, I almost think about all the women that I either emotionally or physically abused. I think about it almost every other day. Pretty much almost every day. I think about reaching out to them and apologizing, reaching out to them. I don't know what to say what. I wouldn't know what to say. Well, I would say sorry. I'll apologize. I wouldn't really know when to stop. If I start, I wouldn't know when to stop. I would be constantly trying to prove that I'm not that person anymore, searching for their forgiveness. And once you repent, Yah's forgiveness is all you need. You don't need anybody else's forgiveness or for them to forgive you. That's how I left it. I left it alone after that. When I was about to embark on that same path of trying to turn back to all the women I slept with and apologize and all that, even some of my I still have dreams about for some reason, only because they're in my subconscious more because I'm just, man, if I only had the chance to tell them how much I'm sorry, or tell them, you know, hey, this is why I was the way I was, and this is why I'm at now. That conversation will never happen. Never. So it always plays out in my mind in random, you know, random times throughout the day of what I could have said or what I should say or what I wished I could say. To now, it doesn't bother me as much as anymore. I just rest with, it's Yah's forgiveness over me. He has brought me out of the shadows, brought me out of the pit, and now I'm going to show forth repentance and praise and joy through him, because it was he that truly forgave me, not the women that I slept with or engaged in fornication and sin with. While they themselves may have not be doing fornication, but they're also doing the worldly pagan holidays and all that. So for what? Why am I go back? They're going to look at me like I'm crazy anyway. They're going to look at me like I'm in a cult. They're going to look at me like I'm lying or I'm trying to get something out of them, because that's how they knew me. Like, oh, he's just being nice because he wants something out of me. You might as well leave that alone, because once you try to prove that you are not that person anymore, it is a slippery, slippery slope. Another brother asked me to talk about Shavuot. For those who are following me or following the calendar that I'm on, and even if you are not on the calendar I'm on, you can still learn about what Shavuot is. I'm pretty sure it's coming up for you guys in the next couple of months. But I'm going to give you the verses where you could look at it yourself. Deuteronomy 16, 10 and 11. And you shall keep the feast of Shavuot unto Yahuwah Elohaka with a tribute of a freewill offering of your hand, which you shall give unto Yahuwah Elohaka according as Yahuwah Elohaka has blessed you. So they call it the Feast of Weeks, where from the Pesach, the last Shabbat of the Pesach, you count 7 weeks, and this is where you get, in the middle of the month, the third month, the 15th day. Now, the problem with that is, because time has been sped up, and because we are supposed to observe the ordinances of the moon, and the moon is coming in 10 days too soon, you can't fully complete the 7 weeks, because then the moon would not be full, as it is mentioned in Psalms 81:3, that blow the shofar blow the trumpet at the new moon and the shofar at the full moon, the day of our feasts, the day of our feasts. And if you look at Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, they're all in the middle of the month. And at the middle of the month, the moon is full. That is a telltale sign that you are doing these feast days properly, because every year, the moon should be full for every feast day, ever since David wrote that verse. And for him, he was talking about Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. Three feast days, they're all in the middle of the month, and they're all on full moons. When the moon has been shortened, or it's changed its laws, and it's coming in 10 days too soon, that is disrupting the 7 weeks or the seven Shabbats. So if I did the seventh Shabbat from the last Pesach Shabbat, it would be all over the place. It wouldn't be on the correct moon phase anyway. But if I go through scripture, you learn the origin story of Shavuot. And to go back to free will offering, I know brother asked me, what is a heave offering or a wave offering? A wave offering is basically, if you have a vineyard, or let's say you have a fruit field and you have a fruit drop, you pick up the fruit and you just look to the sky and you wave it and say, this is for you, Yahuwah, this is for you. And you place it to the side. That's a wave offering. I'm still on the ropes with the heave offering thing. When you hear heave, you feel like you throw it somewhere, like you heave it somewhere. I haven't looked in it too deeply yet, because I'm still on ascending smoke offerings, burnt offerings, and drink offerings. But a free will offering is basically, since we don't have farmland, is you go to the grocery store, buy, say, like the most expensive or the most priced fruit that doesn't have a blemish, it doesn't look like it's been beaten or bruised, and you just set it to the side, or you offer it on your altar, or you put it to the side on the grass somewhere and just let nature do its thing, and then you say, Yah, this is for you. This is what you blessed me with. If he's blessed you with extra, you know, extra numbers in your paycheck, take whatever he blessed you with, or take half of what he's blessed you with in that paycheck, and buy fruit, buy livestock, buy like beef, lamb, or something, and just say, this is for you. And you shall rejoice before Yahuwah Elohaka, you and your son and your daughter and your manservant and your maidservant and the Levite that is within your gates and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow. So this is the Most High that people think that is a terrible, terrible God or terrible, terrible Elohim. He's bringing those who are not part of Yashareel, those who are without, those who have no family, those who are homeless, those who are, like I said before, aren't part of the bloodline of Yashareel, bringing them into one union, one covenant, saying that all are welcomed. I mean, mind you, he still got his set apart ways when it came to the Levites and who could come into the tabernacle, who can come into the Holy of Holies. But for the most part, when he had these feast days, he did not turn anyone away that are among you in the place which Yahuwah Elohaka has chosen to place his name there. So if you go to Numbers 28, this is where we also find the ordinances of what to do on this particular day. And in the day of Bichor, Numbers 28, 26 through 31, when ye bring a renewed oblation unto Yahuwah in your Shavuot, ye shall have a holy assembly, ye shall do no servile work. But ye shall offer the ascending smoke offering for a sweet savor unto Yahuwah, two young bullocks, one ram, seven lambs of the first year. And mind you, we don't have livestock. I make do. I go to Whole Foods or go to a butcher shop. I'll get some beef. I'll get a steak. And then I'll get either a shank. Pretty much I do get a shank or a leg of lamb, and then I burn it as a sending smoke offering. After, I mingle it with flour and oil, which is mentioned in Numbers 28:28. And their oblation of flour mingled with oil, 3/10 deal unto one bullock and 2/10 deal unto one ram, a 7/10 deal unto one lamb throughout the seven lambs, and one kid of goats to make atonement for you. So mind you, we're not sacrificing goats anymore because we have Yahushua to be the ultimate lamb, the Passover lamb, that we do not have to sacrifice animals to atone for sin anymore. You shall offer them beside the continual ascending smoke offering and his oblation that shall be unto you without blemish and their drink offering. So you can mingle the drink offering with the ascending smoke offering when it's mingled with flour and oil. This is the ordinance also for new moons. You usually take the same livestock and you mingle it with oil and flour and wine, and then you burn it. Jubilee 6. This is the origin story of Shavuot. Jubilee 6, 17 through 19. For this reason, it is ordained and written on the heavenly tablets that they should celebrate the Feast of Shavuot in this month once a year to renew the covenant every year. And this whole feast was celebrated in heaven from the day of creation to the days of Noah. This whole feast was celebrated in heaven from the day of creation. Christmas was not celebrated in heaven. Easter is not celebrated in heaven. Thanksgiving is not celebrated in heaven. So those who are coming out of Christianity, whatever religion that you are in, none of the feast days that you have ever participated in or partook in, same as we, is not mentioned in the heavens. Is not mentioned or observed or partook in heaven. So why not do something that is actually being observed in heaven? Noah and his sons observed it for seven jubilees and 1 week of years to the day of Noah's death. From the day of Noah's death, his sons did away with it until the days of Abraham, and they ate blood. But Abraham observed it. And Isaac, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and his children observed it up to your days. And in your days, the children of Yashareel forgot it, obviously when they went into the heavy bondage in Egypt, until ye celebrated it anew on this mountain. Acts 2 and 1, Acts 20 and 16, and 1 Corinthians 16 and 8. Paul talks about breaking his neck to get back to Jerusalem just to do these feasts. And when the day of Shavuot was fully come, they were all with one accord in one place. And this is when Paul determined to go back to Jerusalem to observe that feast. Acts 20:16 says, Paul had determined to sail by Ephesus because he would not spend the time in Asia, for he hasted, if it were possible for him, to be at Jerusalem the day of the Feast of Shavuot. So mind you, he in Asia, he on the other side of the world, trying to get back either by camel, horse, carriage, or boat. He got to get back to get to the Feast of Shavuot. And he says in 1 Corinthians 16:8, but I will tarry at Ephesus until the Feast of Shavuot. So doing these feast days was important to the prophets, even in the old times and in the new times, what they call the New Testament. And also the origin story behind Shavuot is also when Isaac was born. He was born in the middle of the month, 15th day of the third month. Yehuda was also born in the middle of the month, third month of the 15th day. Yehuda was born. And Yehuda means to give praise, to give thanks, or thanksgiving. So mind you, we have our Thanksgiving. It's called Shavuot. That's our Thanksgiving. We of the tribe of Yahuwah. Our name, our tribe means to praise, to give thanks, Thanksgiving. It didn't have to be a Thanksgiving based off of Europeans killing Indians and Native Americans, raping and pillaging them and stealing their land and then trying to have a little dinner, say, oh, thank you for joining us. And then completely eradicated tribes after it. Unrighteousness. Why not do something that got righteousness behind it and a pretty much beautiful origin story? So that's what I'm going to be doing in the next couple of weeks. I think it's next week, to tell you the truth. So I'm going to, with the mind frame, this is my Thanksgiving. Shavuot is my Thanksgiving. Let me get to Gideon. A man of honor. Judges 6, verse 11, I'll start there. And there came an angel of Yahuwah and sat under an oak, which was an Ophrah, that pertained unto Joash and his son Gideon, threshed wheat by the winepress to hide it from the Midianites. So the Midianites was destroying the nation of Yasharel's food supply because Yasharel did not drive out the inhabitants around them. And they allowed the foreign nations to dwell amongst them, knowing they would be a snare and a stumbling block unto them. So if we would listen to the Most High, we would never be thrown off our land. We would never be joined unto other nations and worshiping their gods or in their religions if we learned how to stay within ourselves. And the angel of Yahuwah appeared unto him and said unto him, Yahuwah is with you, you mighty man of valor. And Gideon, whose name means warrior, said unto him, O my Adonai, if Yahuwah be with us, why then is all this befallen us? And where be all his miracles which our fathers told us of, saying, did not Yahuwah bring us up from Mitzrayim? But now Yahuwah has forsaken us and delivered us into the hands of the Midianites. And Yahuwah looked upon him and said, go in this your might, and you shall save Yasharel from the hand of the Midianites. Have not I sent you? So Gideon is a man of strength, a man of might, a man of valor. But we will read that he is also a man of low self-esteem, low confidence, and insecure. And he said unto him, O my Adonai, wherewith shall I save Yasharel? Behold, my family is poor in Manasseh, and I am he, the least in my father's house. The least in my father's house and poor. As if being rich, being the firstborn, being the spoiled firstborn, really, has anything to do with the Most High using you to save the nation of Yasharel. But this is how somebody who has low confidence or low self-esteem would think. Like, why would you pick me? Despite the Most High saying you are a man of valor and that you have might, but you still look at yourself, well, shouldn't somebody of better rapport go ahead of me? Shouldn't it be somebody like a king or somebody with a better stature go ahead of me? And what did the Most High say in Samuel? He said he does not look upon the flesh or the statue of a man, but he judges and chooses them by his heart. So obviously the Most High saw what was in his heart more than what Gideon saw within himself. He saw from the outside. Yahuwah saw from the inside. If Yahuwah has seen in you that you can withstand certain trials and tribulations and tests and battles, that is why he's bringing it out of you, so you can be convinced of yourself through him that you can defeat enemies in battles because of him. Too many of you, scared, cower, or just unsure about yourself when it comes to this walk and how you, if you want to teach, if you want to share the word, if you want to, whatever your abilities are in the Ruach, you are scared to demonstrate them because you believe that these type of abilities belong to someone more deserving than yourself or more gifted. None of us came in with the gift of discernment. We didn't come in with the gift of prophecy. We didn't come in with the gift of healing or the gift of patience, the gift of love. These things had to be learned and nourished within us through this walk. But the Most High chose these abilities in us to show forth his praise. This is why we learn. This is why this walk is ups and downs, trials and tribulations, so we can bring out our spiritual gifts to show and prove to the world, to be a light upon the world, and show them who Yahuwah really is and who he has chosen to deal with. And Yahuwah said unto him, surely I will be with you, and you shall smite the Midianites as one man. And he said unto him, if now I have found grace in your sight, then show me a sign that you talk with me. So mind you, like I said, my brother here is insecure and not confident, and his self-esteem is low. He can't believe that the Most High has chosen him. And some of us are also insecure when it comes to what the Most High asked us to do, or something that we are not truly sure that this is what he wants us to do or be or go, that we need confirmation. To part not hence, I pray you, until I come unto you and bring forth my present and set it before you. And he said, I will tarry until you come again. And Gideon went in and made ready a kid and matzah cakes of an ephah of flour. The flesh he put in a basket, and he put the broth in a pot, and brought it out unto him under the oak and presented it. And the angel of Elohim said unto him, take the flesh and the matzah cakes and lay them upon this rock and pour out the broth. And he did so. Then the angel of Yahuwah put forth the end of the staff that was in his hand and touched the flesh and the matzah cakes. And there rose up fire out of the rock and consumed the flesh and the matzah cakes. Then the angel of Yahuwah departed out of his sight. And when Gideon perceived that he was an angel of Yahuwah, Gideon said, alas, O Adonai Yahuwah, for because I have seen an angel of Yahuwah face to face. And Yahuwah said unto him, peace be unto you. Fear not, you shall not die. Then Gideon built an altar there unto Yahuwah and called it Yahuwah Shalom. Unto this day, it is yet in Ophrah of the Abiezrim. And it came to pass the same night that Yahuwah said unto him, take your father's young bullock, even the second bullock of 7 years old, and throw down the altar of Baal that your father has, and cut down the Asherah pole that is by it. And build an altar unto Yahuwah Elohaka upon the top of this rock and in the ordered place, and take the second bullock and offer an ascending smoke sacrifice with the wood of the Asherah pole, which you shall cut down. Now you understanding why we do these ascending smoke offerings, that they have a symbolic meaning, not just for giving away meat that we weren't going to eat or touch, but something with that fire of quenching something, something being destroyed through fire is the Most High's way of communicating how serious these ordinances are, how serious is his statutes in scripture are, that it's all tied in of how we should truly worship and praise him. Then Gideon took 10 men of his servants and did as Yahuwah had said unto him. And so it was, because he feared his father's household and the men of the city, that he could not do it by day. He did it by night. So again, regardless that the Most High said, you mighty man of valor, or called him a man of valor, saying that he had might, choosing him, yet Gideon was still afraid of his father's house and his father, that he decided to do this at night instead of in day. So what would y'all do? I'm pretty sure you got parents either in the Catholic religion or Christian religion has a cross or a depiction of Greek Jesus all around the place, or Mary statues and all that. If the Most High came to you and said, I want you to tear down these idols, I want you to throw these idols out of the house, what would you do? Would you sneak in at night to your parents' house and throw them out? Or would you run up in there broad day? Why are they there? After church on a Sunday, and just gather up all these idols and burn them in the fire? Would you do that? Or would y'all be scared like Gideon? Please let me know what you would do in the comment section. Because I know a lot of you are coming out of, or your parents brought you up in certain religions. And I know in the Catholic religion, it's a lot of idols. It's a lot of idol buying, like the Mary and the baby Jesus. Then it's Jesus itself. Then it's the crucifix of Jesus. Then it's all types of saints and angels, spread, you know, candles and all that spread around the house. I wonder if you would, in the cover of dark, go in there and snatch those idols out and throw them away, or would you be like a boss? Be like a roaring lion, going up in there and snatching them up while they were there, and then fighting with your parents over it. Anyway, and when the men of the city arose early in the morning, behold, the altar of Baal was cast down, and the asherah pole was cut down that was by it. And the second bullock was offered up on the altar that was built. And they said one to another, who has done this thing? And when they inquired and asked, they said, Gideon, the son of Joash, has done this thing. Then the men of the city said unto Joash, bring out your son that he may die, because he has cut down the altar of Baal, and because he has cut down the asherah pole that was by it. And Joash said unto all that stood against him, will ye plead for Baal? Will ye save him? He that will plead for him, let him be put to death while it is yet morning. If he be an Elohim, let him plead for himself, because one has cast down his altar. Therefore, on that day, he called him Yerubbaal, saying, let Baal plead against him, because he has thrown down his altar. Now, let me stop right there. Yerubbaal is nothing other than Gideon. So, understand when I talked about the last episode of Yahuwah sighing when it came to us, we truly have to drop our heads down and shake them and be embarrassed of how stupid we were and are as a people, knowing that we had a whole God to ourselves that brought us out of bondage after seeing 10 plagues, then seeing a pillar of fire, then seeing the sea of reeds parted, then getting angels bread that no other human has ever touched on earth. From that point then to on, no one has seen angels bread fall out the sky. Then we saw our own brethren Moshe strike a rock and have water pour from this rock. When we wanted meat, the Most High gave us quails. When the waters were too bitter, he dropped a stick in there and the waters were made sweet. Yet, we come into the promised land flowing with milk and honey. And then we turn to the neighboring nations round about us that are destroying us, pillaging from us. we decide to change our name, our Hebrew heritage, our Israelite heritage, to the name that fits the God that is not of our own nation. I can understand how the Most High looked at us and was pissed off, or that his anger was hot against us because of this type of stupidity. Willfully changing our names to fit Baal in the name of Israelites. That's how completely gone we were and stiff-necked we were back then without the Ruach HaKodesh. This is why the Most High said, I'm coming back and I'm going to put my law, statutes, commandments in your heart, so no man will be able to teach who Yahuwah is no more. I'm going to implant it in your brain, just like Elon Musk is trying to implant chips in our brains for us to have all this type of worldly AI knowledge. The Most High say, you know what? I'm going to put my Ruach in your chest so you do not disobey me anymore. Because if I don't do that, you dumbasses will go around calling yourself Baal and Yerubbaal and Balthasar and all this type of unnecessary nonsense, try to fit other nations' gods. Now, mind you, when Daniel's name was changed, he didn't change it himself. It was changed for him. The same thing with Yehuda Maccabees. When they are around, when other nations ruled over us, they wanted us to change our name. The same thing with Hadassah. She had to change her name so it could sound Babylonian. That's where Esther came from. Anytime we've gone around other nations, they had tried to take our heritage from us. Either we did it willingly or they did it for us. When Kunta Kinte got off the ship into America, they wanted to call him Toby. The same thing y'all do today, or some people do today in religions. Instead of saying Yahusha, which is not difficult to say, you could just say it slowly. Yahusha. It's not that difficult to say, but people are so adamant about calling him Jesus Christ, you do the same exact foolishness that we have done to ourselves, or other nations have done to us, changing our names. Then all the Midianites and the Amalekites and the children of the east were gathered together and went over and pitched in the valley of Jezreel. But the Ruach Yahuwah came upon Gideon, and he blew a shofar, and Eleazar was gathered after him. And he sent messengers throughout all Manasseh, who also was gathered after him. And he sent messengers unto Asher and to Zebulun and to Naphtali, and they came up to meet him. And Gideon said unto Elohim, if you will save Yashareel by my hand, as you have said, behold, I will put a fleece of wool in the floor. And if the dew be on the fleece only, and it be dry upon all the earth beside, then shall I know that you will save Yashareel by my hand, as you have said. Now, this is a cute test. I have tried this test. When I was unsure about what month I was in, I took a piece of paper, and I wrote 7, 8, or 9, I believe, on it, and I circled the number. I put the sheets of paper in front of my altar where I do the ascending smoke offering. I asked Yahuwah, what month am I going into, or what month am I on? Can you please mark the paper? So I was scared to even do this because I didn't want to be shut down or embarrassed that he would not answer. So I didn't even check the paper for a whole day. And the paper blew into the pool, but the pool was empty. So I said, you know what? Why am I being scared for? Yah has always listened to me when I'm walking in righteousness and I'm not adding sin upon sin in my household. And he's always proven that he has answered me. So I go out there and look at the paper, and boom, I knew what month I was supposed to be on because he left a mark literally right at the line of where I circled the number. So I understand his hesitation, because sometimes you just don't know when you ask y'all. You want to know like a clear cut yes or no. And sometimes he's not going to give us words out of the sky. So it have to be proven a certain way. And it was so, for he rose up early on the morrow and thrust the fleece together and wrung the dew out of the fleece, a bowl full of water. And Gideon said unto Elohim, let not your anger be hot against me. Because, you know, he told him, look, I'm going to save Yasharel by your hand. That should be enough for us. The most I said, I'm going to redeem you, that should be enough for us. But it's like, you just don't know. And you, because you're not secure, because you're not confident when the Most High will do what he said he's going to do, because we have not ever been in a situation when the Most High was talking to us. We assumed that he was talking to us. When we were a religion, we were assuming all up and down that church aisle that the Most High is talking to us. Now, when we come into the realness of the gospel, now we so scared, don't know when we're going to get these answers, how he's going to tell or communicate these answers with us. And we are just insecure because this is something completely new now. So it's funny to me that we've been in religion and swear up and down, even when we had conversation with friends, like, oh yeah, God told me this. The Lord led me this way. Because if you go on TikTok, you can see nothing but Christians talking about how the God told them this, Lord told them that. Even Pam and most of these Freemason pastors talking about, the Lord said this to me. Like, oh, I feel the Spirit of God coming on to me. Like, now when we are actually following the law, statutes, and commandments, we are really unsure when the Most High is going to talk with us. Because we are searching and seeking a man that we have never seen before. And we don't know how he chooses or when he ever chooses to communicate with us. And we don't want to miss the message. So we can understand a little bit when Gideon is unsure or insecure with how he's supposed to communicate with the Most High. Gideon said, let not your anger be hot against me, and I will speak but this once. Let me prove, I pray you, but this once with the fleece. Let it now be dry only upon the fleece, and upon all the ground let there be dew. And Elohim did so that night, for it was dry upon the fleece only, and there was dew on all the ground. And Judges 7, then Yerubal, who was Gideon, and all the people that were with him rose up early and pitched beside En-Harod, so that the host of Midian were on the north side of them by the hill of Moreh in the valley. And Yahuwah said unto Gideon, the people that are with you are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Yasharel vaunt themselves against me, saying, my own hand has saved me. So, mind you, he has three of his brethren, Naphtali, Zebulun, and Asher. A lot of people, about 20,000 people, about to go into battle. And the Most High said, that's far too many. I do not want you to take all these people to go down there and to remove the Midianites, because then you will truly believe that you don't need or have any need of me, that you won't require my help, that you will just say, all right, we just gang up and we'll take care of our enemies on our own, that we don't need to follow law, says commandments, because we got the numbers. This is why the Most High said, I didn't choose you because you were more than all the people of the earth. I chose you because you were the fewest. And do the fewest is the Most High's use of the word humble and humility, using the very least of the world to show and exalt his name. If he showed how to worship and praise his name through the multitude, it would all be watered down and it wouldn't have the same kick. You'd be like, of course they are above all the nations of the world because they got more people than everybody else. There's no God there. So you understand why the Most High chosen the least of the earth and then the least of the family or the least of the household. The same thing he did with David when he said, I'm going to get a man after my own heart. He didn't get a man who was the firstborn. He didn't get a man that had bigger stature. He picked a boy, a shepherd boy from the least of his brethren. And this is the first instance of you hearing the Most High doing it with Gideon, picking the least or the poor of the household. This is all the Most High's plan to show and prove how powerful he is. We are not going to understand his power and his righteousness if we see everything by glory of flesh. When we see somebody with so much charisma, we would think this person has to be a leader called by God. This is what's snagging or snaring the minds of weak believers, because they're looking for an image of a man they can say, this is the man that got charisma. This man can lead me. And look at what happened with the Jim Jones situation. Look how all those people drank that Kool-Aid. Because they followed a man that had charisma. Joel Osteen, Pam, the Winans guy, the Bishop Winans, who talked down on a parishioner because she was $800 short in the donation plate for charity. But they followed that man because he had charisma. That's why they bring these Freemasons into the pulpit. That's why they teach them in their seminaries, in their theological schools. They teach them how to be charismatic. Because if you can show yourself or peacockic in front of people, then people really don't care what you say. As long as you appear, as long as you're masquerading like an angel of light, people will follow. So the Most High is picking the low of the earth, the low of the household, the low of the family, to show proof his strength and that he can uplift and exalt anybody, as just as much he can bring down the haughty and the high-minded and those that are on top of the pedestal, he can bring them down and exalt somebody that's low. And Yahuwah said, Now therefore, go to proclaim in the ears of the people, saying, whosoever is fearful and afraid, let them return and depart early from Mount Gilead. And their return of the people, 20 and 2,000. That's how many people they had with them. And there remained 10,000. So he went up there with 30,000 people. That's a strong army to go against a couple of nations. And Yahuwah said unto Gideon, the people are yet too many. Bring them down unto the water, and I will try them for you there. And it shall be that whom I say unto you, this shall go with you. So he brought down the people unto the water, and Yahuwah said unto Gideon, everyone that laps of the water with his tongue as a dog laps, him shall you set by himself. And the number of them that lapped, putting their hand to their mouth, were 300 men. So he took 300 men with him. Out of 30,000, 300 men. Out of 30,000, 300 men. And Yahuwah said unto Gideon, by the 300 men that lapped, will I save you and deliver the Midianites into your hand, and let all other people go every man unto his place. So the people took victuals in their hand and their shofars, and he sent all the rest of Yisrael, every man unto his tent, and retained those 300 men, and the host of Midian was beneath him in the valley. And it came to pass that same night that Yahuwah said unto him, arise, get you down unto the host, for I delivered it into your hand. But if you fear to go down, go with Purah, your servant, down to the host. So again, this mighty man of valor before the Most High embarked him on this mission, told him in his might, you mighty man of valor, this is what I want you to do. And then the Most High must have known his heart that he was still scared. After trying the Most High twice that he will give the Midianites into his hand, Gideon, whose name means warrior, was still afraid to go down into the battle by himself as a leader. He needed someone to go with him. Again, we are seeing his spiritual abilities, his spiritual gifts evolve by the testing of his Ruach. We're seeing the Most High be patient with him to bring him in the fullness of his own name, which is warrior. And you shall hear what they say, and afterwards shall your hands be strengthened to go down unto the host. Then went he down with Purah, his servant, unto the outside of the armed men that were in the host, and Midian, and Amalek, and all the sons of the east, Nephilim in the valley, like grasshoppers in abundance, and camels without number, like sand at the edge of the sea in abundance. So let me break this down to you. You got the Midianites, the Amalekites, which is Esau's descendants, and Amalek means to lick blood, so you know exactly what type of men they are dealing with, and the sons of the east, Nephilim, that's in the valley. So again, we got giants in the valley, like grasshoppers in abundance, so it's a lot of people, more than I think 30,000. And when Gideon was come, behold, there was a man that told a dream unto his fellow and said, behold, I dreamed a dream, and lo, a cake of barley bread tumbled into the host of Midian and came unto a tent and smote it that fell and overturned that the tent lay along. And his fellow answered and said, This is nothing else save the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Yasharel. For into his hand has Elohim delivered the Midianites and all the host. So before this battle was about to kick off, the Most High sent confirmation through a dream that had nothing to do with Gideon, but his fellow, his friend, there's some random man giving confirmation like, oh, you are truly are going to have the Midianites and Amalekites delivered into your hand. There is nothing to fear. So the Most High has confirmed this man who is weak in confidence, weak in self-esteem, confirmed him over and over again to bring out his spiritual ability of being a warrior. So what if, going back to when the Most High said and called him a mighty man of valor, what if he was a coward at the time? And then the Most High had to speak life. He had to speak those words to him to make him believe that he was truly a mighty man of valor. Because mind you, before I said in Judges that Yisrael needed to be taught war. They needed to be taught how to fight. So what if Gideon really wasn't really about that action yet? But his name preceded him. What if Gideon was really a coward and was scared and timid? Because we've shown that he is. That the Most High is instructing him to bring him into the fullness of his name. And it was so when Gideon heard the telling of the dream and the interpretation thereof, that he worshipped and returned into the host of Yasharel and said, arise, for Yahuwah has delivered into your hand the host of Midian. So this is now his confidence. He heard the dream. He worshipped. And he said, all right, now I'm ready. Now I'm ready. And Gideon came to Yarden and passed over. I'm in Judges 8 and verse 4. And Gideon came to Yarden and passed over, he and the 300 men that were with him, faint yet pursuing them. And he said unto the men of Sukkot, give, I pray you, loaves of bread unto the people that follow me, for they be faint, and I'm pursuing after Zivok and Salmunna, kings of Midian. So now, Gideon went down into the valley, and everybody running. They broke the cisterns in their hand. They blew the shofar. They scared up the host of Midian. They scared up the host of Amalek. And now the kings are running away from Gideon. So Gideon is giving chase to them, trying to get these two kings. And the princes of Sukkot, that had nothing to do with the battle, said, are the hands of Zivok and Salmunna now in your hand, that we should give bread unto your army? And Gideon said, therefore, when Yahuwah has delivered Zivok and Salmunna into my hand, then I will tear your flesh from the thorns of the wilderness and with briars. Now this man is confident. Now this man got self-esteem. Now this man is not to be played with. This is not a man that you could play up in his face now. Before, he was asking Yah for every little thing. So when the princes of Sukkot said, why do I need to give you bread? Are the kings of Midian in your hand? So why would I feed you? Gideon said, all right. When Yahuwah gives me these two kings, I'm going to come back. I'm going to take the briars and thorns from the wilderness, and I'm going to tear your flesh with them. Damn. And he went up thence to Penuel and spoken to them likewise. And the men of Penuel answered him as the men of Sukkot had answered him. And he spoke also to the men of Penuel, saying, when I come again in peace, I'm going to break down this tower. This man has now found confidence and self-esteem. After now going through the trial and tribulation of his first major battle, now he is truly prepared and know that Yahuwah is with him, that he has nothing to fear. So he had two people now try to test his gangster, play up in his face. The first said, he said, I'm going to take the thorns and briars from the wilderness. I'm going to tear your flesh up with them. Now he told the second people, when I come in peace, I'm going to tear this down. That is what's being a warrior. That is what it takes to have the ability or the spiritual gifts be brought out of your Ruach by trial, tribulation, test, battle, and war. Now, mind you, we may not be called to go down into the valley and fight against Americans or fight in whatever respective country you are in. But when it comes to principalities, doctrines, demons, unclean ruachs, and people just trying and testing you to see if you really walking with Yahuwah, these things are necessary, even when it's within your own household or with among your own family members. It is necessary to prove you so you can have that warrior spirit, that warrior ruach. Now, the sad thing that happened to Gideon, that after he died, Gideon had many women. Many women. And he had 70 sons. One of his sons that he had from a stranger. So if you go back to Proverbs 5, I'm bringing it all back. If you go to Proverbs 5 and read Proverbs 5, what I just said about that, that's exactly the type of woman he had as a concubine. He had a stranger woman that was of the nation that he just conquered. And the son that she had, name was Abimelech. And Abimelech wanted the power for himself. So he convinced his mother, and his mother convinced the nation that she was born from to choose Abimelech as a man to rule over them. And Abimelech killed all his other brothers. He killed all his brethren except for one, Jotham. And what the Most High did to ensnare Abimelech, he caused an evil ruach to be a division before Abimelech and the Midianites. So the Most High has the ability to separate you with an evil ruach once he finds out that your plans are not walking with his plans. He will cause somebody that you want to be with. He will cause somebody you want to go back to. He will cause a ruach into this person to reject you or to be a snare, stumbling block, and a trap to you, just as he did to Abimelech, if you read Judges on, chapter 9 and on. And he had Jotham to be the man to destroy Abimelech, to be the bloodline that lasted after Gideon, righteous Gideon, was dead. This is all the plan of the Most High. You cannot disrupt the plans of the Most High, especially the plans for your life. So we may think like, oh, let's go back. Let me do something else. I got something else cooking. I want to show everybody how good I am. I'm a good guy now. I'm righteous. And the Most High will cause a division between you and your plans. And then wherever it happens after that will be your iniquity upon your own head. So, in my advice, stick to the plan. Find your spiritual gifts. Have your eyes always facing towards Yahuwah. Allow him to bring those spiritual gifts out of you to cleanse you of your weakness. Of your weakness for women, your weakness for your ex, the weakness to vice, the weakness to anger and impatience. Let Yahuwah deal with you, because this is all a test to bring out your true spiritual gift. And it cannot happen if you walk through this life with your head in the sand. You need to go through these battles. You need to go through the tearing of your flesh, the tearing of your ruach, so you can be rebuilt into the man of Yah, a mighty man of valor. I see y'all next time.